Yeah, I don't know if my mission was for the people who didn't act right to somehow have a aha. That would have been a waste of time writing this book because they didn't act right when I told them they weren't acting right while they were doing it. So what about it being in a book would make them change? And furthermore, they don't have access to me. Even if you did have a change of heart or you felt something, you're not adding any value.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Live Strong Project. Of course, you know who I am. I'm your gracious host, AC. And as always, it's an honor to bring you the Live Strong Project, as we always do. So in today's world, I mean, there's a lot of things going on in today's world. We don't want to get into, everything. But one of the things that I think we've probably in the last 10 years or so, and longer than that, but just the structures and the beliefs around race. So as Black people, we know, hey, race it's a touchy subject, right? Stemming from everything we've gone through in the 60s, 70s, and even today, that's a touchy subject. But when you're biracial, you often get caught up in two worlds. And being biracial in today's world can mean navigating multiple identities while learning where you truly belong. So the journey of discovering who you are beyond labels and expectations, I think, this is just humbling me, I believe that's where real strength begins. So on today, our guest, he's a licensed therapist, he's an author, which I'm really dying to get into, the whole author piece with him, because his book is special. So, well, it's not really, but we'll get into it. We'll get into it. But he has experience as, of course, a biracial child growing up in America, born around the 1992 Los Angeles riots, white mother, father from Sierra Leone. He shares a powerful story of navigating culture and self-discovery. Through his music-inspired memoir and his work as a therapist, he now helps others move toward clarity, confidence, and wholeness. So, on today, Live Strong family, I want you to give a warm round of applause for our guest, Mr. John Zell Anderson. What's going on? How are you doing?
Hello. First of all, thank you for that intro. That's made me feel,
I try.
Made me feel real special. Okay. I'm doing well. I got a large Diet Coke here that I'm sipping on. So,
hey.
Bills are paid. We just passed the first of the month. So,
And like you said earlier, in today's economy, that's good.
The biggest flex as an adult is having your stuff on auto pay.
Ooh, there you go. Well, there you go. And to be honest, everybody can't do that right about now. So if you have yours on autopay, hey.
You're doing okay.
You're doing okay. Hey, so why don't you kick this whole thing off and start, by telling the Life Strong family who John Zell Anderson is.
That is a ever-evolving dynamic question, but I'll try.
Okay.
I am a human. I am a Black person. I am a father. I am a company of one. I am an avid reader. I am anxious. I am a storyteller. And I'm a partner. I'm a family member. I am a citizen of my community.
Okay, so can you tell us about the beginnings of John Zell? So I reading your bio, I understand you were born 1992 around those LA riots and are you from, where are you from? You're from LA?
No, I'm not. I am from Roanoke, Virginia, which is Southwest Virginia. I've lived in the state of Virginia my whole life. So I currently live near the capital of Virginia, which is Richmond.
Okay, yeah.
So that's where I'm located.
So born around 1992, and here you are, you're, biracial. Tell us a little bit about, your humble beginnings.
Yeah. So I, you mentioned the book, and we'll probably get into that, but.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. So I kind of talk about those formative years of having, a white mother and a West African father. And in the 90s, they refer to you as mixed. But in my situation, I was primarily raised by my white mother and didn't have much influence or presence from the black father. But no matter how you slice it, I'm black being raised in whiteness. I don't pass as white, by any stretch of the imagination. So identity development, kind of like you said in your intro, is the world will define you, right? Like before I ever knew what race was, I was somewhat aware of the one drop rule, right? And then the interesting thing is, like, my first racists were my caregivers, feeling like, okay, I didn't choose my identity, but am I too black, or am I not black enough, or, but I'm too black to be white enough, like that kind of, but then everyone on the outside defining who they think you are, projecting things upon you. So the book and the stories that I share is kind of talking about that miseducation from the beginning, which is right. What that section of the book is called. And then it goes into unlearning and graduation. So kind of going through that progression of identity development.
Right. So you mentioned the word mixed. I'll be honest, I'm, in my earlier days, and I didn't mean it. I don't think we meant it, or at least I didn't mean it, in a derogative fashion. But explain to us how that word made you feel. Because to me, back then, it was just the term. It was just a term that everybody used to define. And like you said, the world would define you, and they defined you as mixed. And like, we would hear other people say, I would hear, biracial people say the word mixed. Mm-hmm. And so I just assumed in my ignorance that was okay to say.
I've never had a negative feeling about the word mixed. that was just what people called me. Now I take offense to when people have said like half breed or mixed breed or something like that, like I'm a cow or a dog, but mixed itself never bothered me. Some of the other ones that kind of derive from that are problematic, but it's more so that like you mentioned earlier, that races of, I mean, you didn't say it specifically, but it's a social construct. It's right. Based on the environment and who is speaking on it and what their motives are. But before I ever open my mouth, before you know my name, someone could be like, oh, he's mixed. When you see me with a white mother, right? Or if I'm with my West African father who has, darker children than me, and I'm the oddball, like, you're gonna be like, oh, he's mixed, right? So that identity being a default or an assumption before someone knows who you are as an individual is kind of just part of the existence. But the term itself doesn't bother me.
Okay. So you mentioned earlier, you said, you experienced some sort of racism from caregivers.
Mm-hmm.
How did that I mean, because I'm you know, trying to paint this picture, and I'm like, wow, that's, when you say caregivers, are you talking teachers or
my mother, my grandmother?
Oh, well, okay.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, okay. So, yeah. Wow. So your own mother, were those feelings of anger towards your father, or were they actually racism towards you?
I think it was in my adulthood, in the era of the book that is under the section of like unlearning. Mm-hmm. Once I got out of my childhood and lived on my own, I was able to get insight into what the rest of the world was looking like. And then I was able to be like, wow, that was wrong. That was racist. That was abuse. That, you know, you start to know better. But, you know, my mother, you know, would say the N word with the hard R, you know, and she's a white lady, right? And she thought, because she had black children, that was okay. There were phrases, I don't think I put this in the book, but, you know, even something about like, okay, get in the car, you know, you're going to ride nigger in the back kind of thing, like phrases like that. And I didn't realize that it was, you know, problematic and where it was coming from until I was an adult. But the trying to not be too much or enough in different spaces was what kind of developed from that. So, and then of course you get into school and the black kids are like, well, you're not black enough, or right. or the white kids are like, well, you're black.
Well, you're black.
This is what we assume about you. So, you know, and then, you know, it was the 90s, but there are people who feel a way about, you know, a white person with black children, and which of course is evidence that they're not sticking to their race or whatever. So, your mere existence is never gonna satisfy everyone. So, yeah, racism is all around us. Even though it's a social construct, it's oftentimes other people's problems with your existence that you didn't ask to be here, which is, you know,
wow,
it's ridiculous all around. So,
wow. So you mentioned when you became an adult, you realized things were wrong. And I think you mentioned therapy. And mm-hmm. you yourself are a therapist now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so talk about that transition. So here you are, you become an adult. You have the feeling that something's not right. I need to go talk to somebody about this. And then you transition that into, I'm going to do this thing that helped me get from point, you know, point A to point B.
Yeah. I was in college. I was studying psychology.
But so you knew you wanted to be a therapist from the beginning?
No, I didn't actually. Okay. So I was studying psychology in the state of Virginia at the time. You couldn't major in education. So I was going to be a teacher. I was a psychology major, minor in elementary education, and I was going to be an elementary school teacher. And so now, mind you, college was me getting away from my family of origin to some extent.
Okay.
But there was still, obviously, there was a lot of trauma that I went through prior to that, that I wasn't fully making sense of. But of course, studying psychology and starting to understand, like, what is dysfunction? What is trauma? What is, how do our brains adapt in cognition and development and all this stuff? So the wheels were spinning. But then with the teacher part, I did some internships and I got to the point where I was like, I hate kids. I don't want to do this. So, and then that kind of spun me into a crisis because I was like, well, I'm like a junior in college. Like, if I'm not going to be a teacher, what am I going to do? And that was like the catalyst where I kind of, you know, freaked out. I've had anxiety my whole life, I believe, but it came to the forefront where at that point I was having like 10 panic attacks a day. Which became so unsustainable. That's what got me into therapy as a college student, they allowed you to go to the counseling center for free. And so I did therapy, and then I started taking medication. And then once I started to stabilize, I was like, well, I want to be a teacher, so why don't we become a therapist? You know, I already got the psychology bachelor's, let's go to grad school and become a therapist. So, and it ended up being between studying psychology undergrad, and then doing, you know, the master's degree in professional counseling. It almost like, because you're supposed to be getting the fundamentals on how to help people with their various things. And it's like, oh shit, before I ever set foot in grad school, I had a cute like 22 years of like intensive mental health, like on the ground experience from my childhood. So it had turned into a vehicle in which I could, as Biggie says, turn negatives into positives. So the things that were painful to me can become lessons or anecdotes or experiences that I can use to help someone on a similar journey. And as a storyteller, I do that same thing. Like I quite literally took my, you know, pain and put it somewhere where it can be humorous, creative, but also it could help someone be seen. So it evolved into, I was going through it. I was like, I could do this. And then I went and did it. But yeah, don't ever trust a therapist who ain't been to therapy. So.
Okay. but we won't know if they've been to therapy or not. They're not.
Ask them. Us.
You can tell us. That's the first thing you want to do. Hey, by the way,
you ever been to therapy?
I have.
If they say no, run. No. When you go to like to a new therapist, be like, hey, have you ever been to therapy, therapist?
Just, and if they say no, just be like, all right, I'm out.
Be well. Yeah, because you got to think, you're giving access to your vulnerability to someone. Mm-hmm. It would be beneficial if the person knew what it was like to be in your shoes.
And it makes sense.
Practice what you preach.
It makes sense. I've never asked that question. I bet you I am now though.
I'm a bit more assertive than the average, so I say the thing that everyone else is thinking. So.
Okay. So in perfect segue, because you showed Mixtape. Now and I don't want to, you know, I want you to explain is you know exactly what Mixtape is, but it's not your average, it's a memoir, correct? But it's not your average everyday memoir. That's the beauty in it. I want you to explain it, but before you even talk about it, just reading about it, I was like, oh, that's dope. Like that's so as you're telling us what Mixtape is and about, how did you come up with that idea?
Okay. So Mixtape is my favorite thing I've ever written. I'll try my best to be concise about it. So, it's a double meaning. The first, obviously the word mixtape, we know what a mixtape is you put a playlist together with a loose meaning, whatever. And so with that literal meaning, this book is, based around a playlist. It's not based around a table of contents. Mm-hmm. So, at the beginning of the book, there is some QR codes to where you can go to the actual playlist on Spotify or Apple Music. And the playlist to this book will be there, the mixtape, right? And so as you get through reading, I don't have chapter titles. I use the track titles as the marker for, and I call my chapters tracks. So you'll see a cassette tape with the song on there. So the opening of the book is Notorious Thugs by Biggie featuring Bone Thugs and Harmony. And there's something in each of the songs that I selected that kind of connects to what I'm going to say in that section of the book. Like Notorious Thugs, the line that I think of is been in the shit since 92. Look at all the bullshit I've been through. That's the opening track to the book because I was born in 1992 and you about to read about the bullshit I've been through. So I did that because I'm a very, I can't remember a time in my life where I wasn't immersed in music. Like even like the cover is me sitting next to a boombox, right? Like,
right.
I am constantly immersed in music, and I, you know, we talked about like stories. Music is stories. It's resonating. It's connecting, right? And so, I thought of like, okay, a memoir is not necessarily a life story, but mine just happens to be a memoir that covers a longer span of time. So it's the months leading up to my birth through about age 31. And it's a long span of time, but the I'm telling my story and it's through the written word, but I imagine like if I'm making the movie of my life, like through writing this book, what am I, how do I want to do that? And I think of like, well, what's the soundtrack? As a person who loves music so much, I'm thinking like, oh, what was the soundtrack? Like, I was that kid who would like watch MTV and I'd be like, oh, this is from the soundtrack of this movie. You know, of this, like, the score or whatever it was that went with that movie. It was another way to propel that story forward. And I wanted my story to, the story speaks for itself, but I wanted the mixtape to be the framework for how I told my story. And it was really fun to kind of select the tracks and change them around and kind of let the readers decide like, okay, he chose the song, I wonder why. And then you read it and everyone's going to get a little bit different, maybe.
Right. So I was going to ask you, so like, I can imagine you sitting there and immersing yourself in all this music and then you having to decide that one or maybe that one is more. So what was that process like? Like, I mean, cause most, if correct me if I'm wrong, but most, if not all of the songs are hip hop rap related, correct?
Yes, most of them are hip hop, R&B, pop.
Right.
I'm gonna open up to it right now.
There's a lot of music out there.
Yeah. So I think there's 36. I think there's 36 tracks.
Okay.
So most of it is hip hop, R&B, pop. The majority of the artists are Black. There's a few sprinkles of white in there. But what was the question about? You said about how did I go about choosing?
What was that process like for you? Like, you're sitting there with all this music that's available, like, and I'm sure you got to a point where one of those tracks or slash chapters, there could have been 10 songs that would have fit perfectly. What was that decision process like?
It was fun. And because originally early on in the writing process, I had the quotes from the songs. So, okay, all right. For example, Been in the Shit Since 92, Look at All the Bullshit I've Been Through was at the start of the chapter.
Okay.
I got through however many rounds of edits and things like that. And then towards the end, the publisher was like, you got to remove these. That's copyright infringement.
Right.
And I was under the impression that I was using fair use because it wasn't a ton. But I don't want to get sued. So I took them out and I was like upset about it, but then it ended up working out because those cassettes, the internal or the interior design and the way it looks is it worked out better. I listen to music and sometimes I would throw something on like the little playlist I was keeping. And I was like, ooh, this could prompt something to write about. Cause as I'm structuring things, I'll feel something. And the music doesn't necessarily go with the time period that I'm writing about. You know, like in my earlier years, we have like, I have track three is Sidewalks by The Weeknd featuring Kendrick Lamar. Track four is Get Up 10 by Cardi B. Like those artists were not out in the 90s. Like, so they're not necessarily like tied to the time period, but there's something about that song that connects with what I'm writing about. And so, you know, like Sidewalks, The Weeknd says, grew up with no father, so nobody ever sunned me. And that was what I used that in the part where I'm basically saying, okay, who is my father and what is the situation surrounding my birth, right? So the music helped me as a writer kind of collect my ideas and or even today, like I'll hear something in a song and it'll give me a writing prompt of maybe a poem to write or an essay to work on and stuff like that. So yeah, there was a lot of kind of playing around with that. And I think at the very end, there were a couple of switches of some songs. And because then when it became like, okay, the track is the chapter title, there was one that didn't quite fit. The original song was a special by Lizzo, the remix featuring SZA.
Okay.
And I had that in there, but with the track title of my section of the writing being special, my editor said, well, you're saying that this chapter is called special, but you're not feeling very special with what you write in that part of it. So that doesn't fit. Mm-hmm. You know, it's almost like it has to be cohesive and the structure that you've created has to be uniform. So I swapped that one out and I think I put, what did I put? I put Brave Face by Halle.
Okay.
There, which had just come out. So in the final thing, like when I originally wrote the book, that song wouldn't have been an available thing to me, but I had been listening to that song on repeat and it fit really well with what that track of the book looked like. So it was kind of like a, you know, I'm not a musician, but I felt like I was like in the lab, like cooking up a bomb playlist. So
we all felt like, well, first of all, I know there's a lot of like, if there's anybody who was born in the 2000s, first of all, they don't know what a mixtape is or a cassette. So, you know, that's a whole nother story, but I'm dying to know, have any of the artists the names of their music that you've used, have they ever like reached out to you and said, hey, that's so cool or that's awesome?
So I did a series leading up to the book coming out where each day I would share it. I called it my track unveiling party. So I would play a snippet from the song. It's on Instagram. If you follow me on Instagram at @JohnZell_, there's a little highlight reel and you can watch all of them. But I would tag the artist and I would play a snippet of the song and I would read a piece of that section of the book just to be like, hey, this is why I chose this song, right? Mm-hmm. Most of the artists, obviously, you know, Megan Thee Stallion ain't got no time to, you know, pay attention to little old me, right? But one artist, Mayada, who she has a song that I use called Rest in Peace, Captain Save-A-Ho. I had tagged her, and at one point she had commented on something saying that she was just excited that I used her song and that she's looking forward to reading my book. So, the ability also to, it's not just like top 40 artists that I picked, but some of these people are going to be like, who is this and why did, you know, I didn't get a ton of like, you know, I tagged the artist when I would play snippets of the songs or whatever, but that one stood out to me because it's like, the song that I chose, like her song that I chose, went with the track of the book that was my most painful one to write. Like that section of the book was my hardest thing to write. It's also my favorite chapter. So it was kind of like, oh, the music that I chose, it goes to a part of the story that it was the most meaningful for me. So
that's gotta feel great for the artist. I mean, especially an up and coming artist, you know, like her, and you know, for her to say, not only is somebody listening to my craft, my music, they like it, and he liked it so much, he used it for his book. Like that's got to feel awesome for him. So I'm glad she was able to reach out and tell you how she felt. So here you are. I've got a question. You seem to be a hip hop head, just a little bit.
Yeah.
All right. So give me two tracks. If you could sum up the entire beginning of your life, listen, pre-therapy, mm-hmm. what's that one track? And then after therapy, one track. He's back in the lab.
I'm going to use my playlist from the book because I know one of them.
Okay.
Okay. Pre-therapy, we're going to go with Lost Ones by Miss Lauryn Hill.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And post-therapy, Not Nice by Megan Thee Stallion.
Okay. All right, so if anybody knows those songs, they can kind of generalize, like, just by the musical tracks that you just selected, kind of, you know, what John Zell is kind of, you know, all about. Now, you know, not in detail, but a generalization, right? Mm-hmm. So of course, Lost Ones is like, that's one of the greats. I mean, come on, mm-hmm. that's Miss Lauryn. That's Miss Lauryn. And I think I'm older than Lauryn, but she's still Miss Lauryn to me. So you being a therapist, and you know, dealing with different issues, mm-hmm. Different things from different people, and are you still in therapy yourself? Because I've always felt that I'm like, for someone to sit there and listen to all of these things that people are going through, I'm like, geez, I would definitely need some type of. So I'm curious, are you in therapy as well?
Yeah, I've been in therapy on and off since I first started back in college. Wow. And so I'm currently, I guess, off, as in I'm not actively going. In 2023, when I first started writing this book, I went through 4 therapists that year. So, and a rough thing is that being a therapist, it's really hard to find a therapist. And it's weird because I definitely have clients of mine who are therapists, but I feel like when I try to find a therapist and they know I'm a therapist, they treat me different. It's almost like if they challenge me or something, it's almost like you're not listening to me because you think you know it. I feel like it's a power struggle sometimes. And I find it hard to get the care that I deserve. So lately, my therapy has been more holistic. So I have been doing yoga. I go to massage therapy. I obviously like digging into my craft of storytelling and writing, doing right. poetry. That's been more my holistic therapeutic approaches. But I'm not opposed to going back to therapy. It's just really, it was really hard. I would say writing this book felt like therapy on steroids, though. So that was the most therapeutic thing I've ever done. And only I could have done that work because it was sitting with it. But yeah, I'm not opposed to going back to therapy if I felt I needed it. But in my experience, it's kind of like go when you need it. I don't need to be every single week or anything.
Right. I'm curious, after you wrote this book, were you able to share it with anybody from your past, your childhood? Like, were you able to say, you know, appreciate it if you read this, so that they could see what you were going through and how you were affected, maybe some of the things that they did or said attributed to that? Were you able to share it?
I was. It didn't go so great. If you read the book, you'll see that a lot of my family of origin eventually got cut off because they were terrible human beings. One of the people that remained was my maternal grandmother. And, you know, throughout the book, you see her as being my hero and like the one person that loved me. And then in my... as I got older, she kind of turned into the op. And then there was kind of like some healing and like getting back to a good place. But when the book came out, she bought a copy of it and started reading it. And it, I wouldn't say it traumatized her, but being accountable to her role in things was not something she had the emotional capacity to do. So it was, then it was almost like she was calling me, blowing my phone up, being like, oh my God, you know, like freaking out and being like, I'll never forgive myself for this. And all, it was dramatic. And she ended up like not finishing the book. She made a big to do about returning the book to me. Like, I'm giving it back. I don't want this. Like, so
she literally gave the book back.
She literally brought the book to my house and like returned it. And so I didn't feel too much of a way about that because I wasn't seeking validation from her. But they say when you write your story, don't expect those who harmed you to read it. You know, I don't know if, I don't speak to my mother, I don't speak to my father, I don't know if they'll ever read this, and I don't care, because you don't write your story for as a revenge tour. You write it for to inform, to liberate, and whether it be you, the writer, or someone who has had a similar experience, to be seen, right? Now, if those various people are, I guess, brave enough to read the story, whatever impact it has on you, it has. My disclaimer at the start of the book is the stories are true. I changed most of the names so my ops can't sue my black ass. Like, so, you know, I changed your name. And if you feel a way about being written about, you should have behaved better. So that's kind of where I'm at on that. But yeah, I don't know if my mission was for the people who didn't act right to somehow have a aha, that would have been a waste of time writing this book, because they didn't act right when I told them they weren't acting right while they were doing it. So what about it being in a book would make them change? And furthermore, they don't have access to me. Even if you did have a change of heart or you felt something, you're not adding any value. So I've kind of done a lot of acceptance and healing through the therapy and whatnot, so that I don't need them to, but I guess it would be interesting. I don't particularly want to know their reactions to it, but they can talk to their own therapist about that. Oh,
God. So you were able to move from, you know, a time in your maybe an area of, or a time of confusion. I'm sure, you know, there were a lot of feelings growing up. I'm sure there were a ton of things that you, but confusion had to be one of them. So, so confusion to, let's say, clarity, and who you are and who you wanted to be. What was one of the main things that helped you make that transition?
From confusion to clarity. It sounds cliche, but books and music are my best friends.
Okay.
You know, I try to make that apparent through mixtape. Like, I kind of give nods to, obviously, the music I was listening to, what right. the pop culture was doing, but also I try to highlight, like, what book was I reading at that time that meant something to me. Like, I think of, like, The Boxcar Children in fourth grade. I think of reading Matilda by Roald Dahl. I think of reading The Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl by Issa Rae when I was in grad school. Like, the books that I was reading anchored me, and they helped me to find a sense of clarity in something. Like, I'm at a point now where I'm 33, but I read an average of over 100 books a year, because that's my escape, but also it is where I can be loved, liked, and understood. I can get into someone's head. And it's cheaper and healthier than doing drugs. So.
Wow. Okay. So there are many people out there probably caught between two cultures like you were yourself. You know, caught between two cultures, different expectations, different labels, like, you know, you talked about earlier. What's that one piece of advice that you would give someone that's still searching to find out where they belong?
You're worthy of reciprocity. Reciprocity means love, like, and understanding in multiple directions. The searching means that you don't currently have the safety, but knowing that you're worthy of love, like, and understanding is very important. Knowing that you're worthy of reciprocity is important, because if you don't know that you're worthy of something, your search might get distracted. You might settle, or you might grab for something that's inadequate because it's something. And furthermore, I would add, only you can define your identity. I exist on a lot of different intersections. Like, I am biracial Black. I refer to myself as being Black. I'm a single dad, because I'm separated. It takes a year to get a divorce in Virginia, but I'm a single dad. I am a company of one. But I'm bisexual. So think of, like, okay, biracial, bisexual, right? And right now I am dating men. So people are like, oh, but does that mean you're gay? And it's like, okay, I have to know my identity so that everyone on the outside doesn't try to step in and be like, this is what you are.
Gotcha.
Or me being, saying I'm Black, but they'll be like, but you're mixed. And I'm like, mind your business, because I've been living my life and I know who I am. So as a person searching for belonging, know who you are internally. Love, like, and understand yourself internally. Fortify that, because the world is going to try to throw you off kilter. But if you know who you are, you will align yourself with people who will see you for who you are versus trying to tell you who they want you to be. And I think that's really important.
Wow. That's powerful. That's powerful. Know who you are so the world cannot define.
Yeah. They will try their damnness. With no context or
with none,
zero.
So if someone listening to this episode says, man, that first let's deal with the memoir first, because look, I'm just ask, can a brother get a signed copy? See, I want a copy, but I want a signed copy. Okay. from the author himself. So we'll chop that up and discuss that after.
I can tell you, I can answer that for you real quick.
Okay.
Signed copy, if you go to johnzell.co, okay. It's my first name, J-O-H-N-Z, like zebra, E-L-L-E.co. If you go there, that's my author website, and there's a series of links for where you can buy the book, but there's one at the top that says signed paperback. So if you click that and, you know, buy that copy, I'll mail you a copy that I personalized to you. So that's the easiest way to get a signed copy.
Oh, that's already done then. All right, cool. So I guess likewise, if somebody just wanted to buy the book, and they would go to the same website. I guess there's a picture anywhere else. I mean, is it on maybe Amazon?
It's everywhere. So everywhere. If you go to johnzell.co, I have your Amazon links. I have your Barnes and Noble. I have your bookshop.org. I have the signed paperback thing. I have Audible, Apple, you know, because it's an audiobook, it's an ebook, it's a hardcover, and it's a paperback. So all the formats are available. And you can just go straight to your marketplace. So if you go to Amazon, if you go to Kindle, if you go to wherever you buy books, you can go on the website and find it there. So it's mass distributed. So yeah. Now, I don't know if it will be in brick and mortar stores, because I'm a debut author, but there's a few Black-owned bookstores that have it in stock. But yeah, you, if you go online sweet. To any bookstore, you can find it. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. It's going to be in brick and mortars too. We, you know,
thank
we,
you.
We're going to speak those things in existence. It's going to be in brick and mortars everywhere. It's going to be everywhere, everywhere. Because something like this needs to be read and listened to. That's the dope part about it. Like the you know, the music integration. It's like when just some of the music that I've heard you, you know, and you know, reading your bio, and there's a couple. I was like, okay, that's definitely. So I'm dying to listen. You said 34 or 35. What was it? 30.
I think it's 36. Yeah,
36 tracks. So I'm dying to hear these tracks. So if someone wanted to reach out to you. If they wanted to, because you've got other writings, right? You've got other works.
I am working on 3 other books right now.
Okay.
So I'm working on a children's book. I'm working on a kind of like a bisexual romance novel.
Okay.
And then I'm also working on a second memoir in verse. So it's new stories, but it will be written in poetry. So
how can someone stay connected to you? How can someone find you and say, man, I got to stay connected to this guy because, you know, I'm dying to hear the rest of his works.
Yeah. So I already said johnzell.co is the website where you can find the book and things like that. I'm on Instagram at johnzell_. So J-O-H-N like Nancy, Z like zebra, E-L-L-E _. So you'll see a cover. The cover of the book is the bio picture. And you follow me there. I post a lot about even just the books that I'm reading. So I love reading books by and about Black storytellers. So I post book reviews just for fun. I post cute pictures of my kid. I post things that I'm doing with my writing and stuff like that. So that's probably the best way to keep up with me. And I respond to DMs and all of that. And of course, you know, I easy to find on the internet because how many John Zells you know? So, you know,
you never know. I mean, you never know. I mean, now you're the first I have met, but you never know. So, man, I appreciate you stopping through on the Life Strong Project. This is awesome. Again, Life Strong Project family. I'm sorry. Please go out there and support this brother, John Zell Anderson. Support the memoir mixtape. Go out there and listen and slash read. I don't know. Is there a word we can we call it? No, I guess not. Because listen and read. We're gonna come up with a word so you can do both.
Listen and read. I mean, technically, listening to an audiobook is reading. So, if you're listening to an audiobook, that's reading. So, you're taking intentional time to absorb a story, so it counts.
But okay, and we can agree to this because you're not.
But what? But what he's saying, y'all, is buy the audiobook and buy the physical copy, and I ain't mad at it.
Exactly.
Do what the man says. And I narrate the audiobook, so.
Oh, sweet. Okay. All right. So that's actually you. That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. So, man, we appreciate you again stopping through in the Life Strong Project. Again, everyone, go out there, support him, follow him, stay abreast of what he's doing because he's got a lot coming down the pipe. John Zell Anderson, man, thanks for stopping through. We appreciate everything that you're doing, especially for, you know, people in need, people like you, people in the community. It's amazing. I think, you know, so many times we always want to glorify the people that are doing crazy stuff. Man, we don't glorify, you know, those that are, you know, actually doing something for you know, the benefit of others. And man, I think is definitely going to benefit a lot of people. Thank you so much. And Life Strong family, that is a wrap for today's episode. Make sure you guys go out there, like and subscribe to this to the podcast, like this episode, comment on this episode, and reach out to Mr. Anderson at your leisure. And as always, your life is fleeting. You must cherish it. Your life is yours. You've always got to live it. This is your host, AC, along with John Zell Anderson. On behalf of Mr. John Zell Anderson, we appreciate you guys listening in, and that's a wrap. Peace.
Thanks for listening to the Life Strong Project.